Section 3, New Choices in Daily Life. As you read, look for the social changes for North Carolinians in the post-war period, widening educational opportunities for high school and college students, the development of the interstate highway system, and the following terms: commute, consolidated high school, interstate highway system, and bypass. After World War II, North Carolina became the state with the greatest number of a new kind of American. Rural non-farm described families who still lived in the country but who did not spend all of their time farming. Nor did these families gain most of their income from the land. By the 1940s, thousands of families in the state lived in rural neighborhoods but commuted, went to and from, nearby towns to work. Sometimes the mother was a school teacher while the father continued to farm. Other times the father worked in a factory and farmed on the side evenings and weekends. What made North Carolina distinctive in this regard was the number of people who still wanted a country life even though they worked in industry. Larger companies like Cannon Mills in Kannapolis even sent buses through the nearby countryside to pick up workers, like school buses picked up their children. This new kind of North Carolinian existed because of the prosperous times in the nation. With incomes rising and employment broadening, state residents for the first time had a variety of choices about how to live and where to live. If they chose to stay in the old rural neighborhood, they could. They could also choose to move to town and perhaps live in one of the new subdivisions, areas divided into lots for houses, being built on the edge of the city. By the 1960s, sons and daughters of farmers built houses in High Meadows, just north of Rocky Mount. Many families across the state made a choice to live in homes that were very different in style from the old farmhouses or shotgun houses of the past. The new brick ranch houses had carports on the side and one long hall down the middle. Even mill village residents had new choices. Many companies began to sell their company mill houses. Workers could stay with the mill but could now own their homes. In spite of these changes, most families retained their traditional habits. Just over half the state belonged to a church in 1950, and half of the church members were either Baptists or Methodists. Widening educational opportunities. North Carolina's young people also had similar freedom of choice in education and career. There were twice as many high schools in the state in the 1950s as there had been in the 1920s. 8 times as many residents were high school graduates. During the 1950s, the variety found in the high schools also increased. The old schools of the 1920s were replaced by fewer and larger consolidated high schools. Before, in places like Troutman in Iredell County, a student went in one door for grade 1 and out the opposite door at the end of grade 12. With consolidation, the old schools became elementary schools and the new high schools were centrally located. The newer high schools had more teachers and more courses to choose from. There were more sports to play, even football in rural areas. Before 1960, some of the schools had been so small they actually competed in 7-man football rather than the standard 11 players to a side. More and more students from farm and factory families could go off to college when they graduated from high school. Many young people chose to become school teachers in the growing schools. This swelled the size of the old normal schools like Appalachian and East Carolina. UNC and NC State more than doubled in size during the 1960s. The children of World War II veterans crowded onto those campuses. Students who wanted to work in manufacturing could take courses at the new community colleges set up in the 1960s. Entertainment changes. North Carolinians, like all Americans, had loved entertainment throughout their history. The increased amount of time they had for leisure after the war also gave them new social outlets. North Carolina had more minor league baseball teams than any other state. Movie theaters multiplied in every town after the Great Depression. Many of the ballparks and theaters did not last, however. Television, the new technology of the post-war period, put them out of business. Television had been developed in New York before World War II, but it did not get to North Carolina until later. In 1949, WBT of Charlotte, which had been the state's first radio station, broadcast the first television show on Channel 3, WBTV. Within a year, television stations opened in Greensboro, Raleigh, and Winston-Salem. Wire aerials, the antenna needed to receive the broadcasts, were soon placed on top of those new brick ranch houses in many parts of the state. Television gave North Carolinians a second new love, college basketball. The state's residents had long supported their high school teams. Almost every county had a tournament during the 1920s and 1930s for both boys and girls. However, only the richest patrons went to the college games. After the war, Reynolds Coliseum was opened at State College. The new coach, Everett Case, promoted his team with the Dixie Classic Tournament, where local teams played the best teams from the rest of the country. In 1953, Wake, North Carolina, Duke, and State helped establish the Atlantic Coast Conference. From the beginning, their games were televised. By the 1960s, North Carolina had won a national championship, and Duke and Wake had come close. All of the Big Four teams had fans across the state. The construction during the 1950s of Dorton Arena at the State Fairgrounds in Raleigh and the Greensboro and Charlotte Coliseums allowed twice as many people to see a game as before. Going places on new roads. After the war, North Carolina advertised itself as Variety Vacation Land. Because industrial workers had more time off, they could go more places. The four regions offered lots of recreation. Factory workers used their savings to build small beach houses on the coast, like Long Beach in Brunswick County. Wealthier citizens continued to play golf in Southern Pines and Pinehurst. In the Piedmont, people could visit Old Salem, set up in 1950 to tell the story of the early Moravians in Wachovia. The mountains region became a favorite place to go. Visits to Grandfather Mountain were enhanced when its mile-high swinging bridge was completed in 1952. Its attraction was an incredible view of the Blue Ridge. The mile-high designation referred to its altitude of 5,280 feet above sea level, not the 188 feet down to the bottom of the crag it spanned. Biltmore Estate was opened to the public in 1956, and state citizens could visit the largest and richest house in the country. After Fontana Dam was completed in 1944, the hundreds of cottages used by the construction workers were converted into guest houses. Thousands came to boat, bike, and see the area. Thousands more did the same thing around Lake Lure. To get everyone to these places, North Carolina began to imitate northern states. It invested in multi-lane highways. One of the first went between Newton and Hickory. It was later expanded past Morganton and Marion to Old Fort at the base of the Blue Ridge. Originally called Highway 70, it gave way eventually to Interstate 40. The multi-lane, limited-access interstate highway system was set up by the federal government in 1956 to connect all parts of the nation. The new types of roads went around cities to avoid downtown congestion. These bypasses, as they came to be called, became common in many communities. One of the first in the East was the Highway 70 bypass around the northern end of Goldsboro. An exception was the expressway built right through the middle of Winston-Salem. By the 1960s, this section of I-40 became the most crowded road in the state. For some, few choices. Despite widening prosperity statewide, the ability to choose how to live was more of a privilege for whites than for blacks. Segregation was still the law and the custom everywhere. Black families went to their own beaches, like Atlantic near Morehead City. Blacks still sat in the balconies of movie theaters and had their own entrances. African Americans had begun to make more money and, in some cases, live in better environments. In Edgecombe County, for example, black families who worked for Thomas J. Pearsall, the legislator who put together the Pearsall Plan, had clean housing, medical care, and the personal attention of Mr. and Mrs. Pearsall. More common, however, were shotgun houses with no window screens, no new gyms at black high schools, or no sewers in black neighborhoods in some parts of Charlotte. As blacks became more educated, the use of literacy laws to keep them from voting began to fall away. Blacks voted regularly in the cities, particularly in Durham and Greensboro. There they were elected to city council. But as late as 1962, a black person who went to register in Edgecombe County was turned away by a public official. Yet, after the war, black citizens made an important choice. They protested the treatment they received at the hands of whites. They risked their own hard-won prosperity, in some cases, even their lives. The actions of North Carolina blacks became important parts of the civil rights movement sweeping the nation in the 1950s and 1960s.